VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. A strong earthquake on Tuesday killed more than 120 people in Tibet and left many others trapped as dozens of aftershocks shook the region of western China and across the border in Nepal. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Video from Yashu Mahajan in Chandragiri, Nepal, shows water running into a street from a pond soon after the quake hit, and a woman exclaiming in Nepali, "Oh my, it's still shaking and the pond water is spilling." The U.S. Geological Survey says the earthquake measured magnitude 7.1 and was relatively shallow. China recorded the magnitude as 6.8. The epicenter was northeast of Mount Everest, which straddles the China-Nepal border. The area where the India and Eurasia plates clash and cause uplifts in the Himalayan mountains remains seismically active. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. President Joe Biden's administration on Tuesday asked a federal appeals court to block a plea agreement for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two co-defendants in the September 11, 2001 attacks. It comes days before the accused 9/11 mastermind scheduled guilty plea in an agreement that would spare him the risk of the death penalty. The appeal comes after the military judge at Guantanamo Bay and a military appeals panel rejected Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's effort to throw out the plea deal, saying he had no power to do so after the senior Pentagon official for Guantanamo approved it in July. The Justice Department argued in a brief that the government would be denied a chance for a public trial and the opportunity to, quote, seek capital punishment against three men charged with a heinous act of mass murder that caused the death of thousands of people and shocked the nation and the world. This is VOA News. A New York appeals court judge on Tuesday denied President-elect Donald Trump's latest bid to delay the Friday sentencing in his hush money case. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
It was the second time in 2 days that Trump was rejected, though he can still ask other courts to intervene. On Monday, Manhattan Judge Juan Merchan denied Trump's request to halt proceedings while he appeals the verdict. Trump's lawyers say he won't be in court for Friday's sentencing. Instead, he'll appear by video. Julie Walker, New York.
Judge Merchan has indicated Trump's sentencing will not include jail time. The World Health Organization on Tuesday said the risk to humans from H5N1 bird flu remains low the day after the first reported human death in the U.S. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
The patient who died from the virus in Louisiana was over 65 years old and had been exposed to both backyard chickens and wild birds. That's according to health officials, who said the patient also had underlying medical conditions, heightening the risk for serious disease.
In a way, the risk is pretty localized, although it does seem to be growing across the U.S.
Sarah Michaels is an assistant professor in New Orleans who studies infectious diseases. She told Reuters wild birds infected the patient's domestic birds, which then infected the patient. Nearly 70 people in the U.S., most of whom are farm workers, have contracted bird flu since April. The virus has circulated among poultry flocks and dairy herds, according to the CDC.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. Meta platform CEO Mark Zuckerberg said on Tuesday his company will end its U.S. fact-checking program and replace it with a user-driven system similar to community notes on Elon Musk's X platform. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
Zuckerberg also said Meta will reduce the curbs on discussions around contentious topics such as immigration and gender identity.
We've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms.
The move marks a reversal in Meta's policy, as Zuckerberg has long championed active content moderation, despite criticism from conservatives over alleged censorship on its platforms.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
stories we are covering. Ghanaian President-elect John Dramani Mahama was sworn in on Tuesday for the third time.
Basically, today, Ghana as a country received an overwhelming complementary support from the rest of the world, having close to 30 heads of state coming for the inauguration.
The arrest of an activist throws the spotlight on alleged illegal lithium mining in Namibia. We'll have analysis on why Ivory Coast and Senegal asked French troops to leave. The trial of Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye and his co-accused resumed on Tuesday in a military court, but abruptly adjourned.
We did not boycott the court. We merely said we cannot proceed without our team member, Aaron Chisa, who had been brutally assaulted and detained.
And Trump is now ruling out military force to control Greenland and Panama Canal. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Biden administration says it has determined that Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, rebel group, and proxies are committing genocide in the country's civil war. The administration said Tuesday it has imposed sanctions on the Sudanese group's leaders. According to the Associated Press, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a statement that the RSF and its allied militias have directed attacks against civilians. The sanctions announced by the U.S. include several businesses based in the United Arab Emirates. The RSF has not acknowledged the sanctions. Sudan's war began in April of 2023 when the RSF and Sudan's military began fighting each other, and it is considered the world's biggest current humanitarian catastrophe. Ghanaian President-elect John Dramani Mahama was sworn in on Tuesday for the third time. He promised during the campaign to prioritize the economy and good governance. Mustafa Bandi is the Deputy General Secretary of Mahama's National Democratic Congress Party, the NDC. He tells me that the party and all of Ghana are ready to support President Mahama accomplish his agenda.
I think that basically today, Ghana as a country received an overwhelming complementary support from the rest of the world, having close to 30 heads of state coming for the inauguration, various international agencies and access and partners of development. Again, the president's commitment, he outlined clearly what he's going to be doing in the next few days. And I think that it resonates with the common challenges that we face. There is a fresh air that is blowing in our country today because the suffocation by political appointees is over. The opulence, the reckless spending of state resources is over, and the Ghanaians can now adopt a new hope. And that was what exactly it is today. The whole of Accra is full of jubilation, parties, dancing. People are excited.
The president said, he promised to reset Ghana in different ways. And I think on the agenda will be the economy. Is your party ready?
I think that President Mahama's agenda goes beyond the party. It embodies the number of Ghanaians who are frustrated, who have lost their businesses, who have lost their capitals, whose income cannot sustain their family. So that tax force of people who are resetting the country embodies every single Ghanaian that have gone through this level of stress. So it goes beyond the political party. But of course, the NDC will support the president to achieve his aim for the people of Ghana and all of us, because cumulatively, it is no longer about party colors. It's about a larger majority of Ghanaians who, for the first time, are exposed to this kind of shocks because of corruption. And so the NDC is ready to partner or to support His Excellency the President to achieve these goals with the people of Ghana.
President Mahama, has he already begun appointing his cabinet?
So far, he has appointed a team to coordinate information regarding stolen money and financial malfeasance by outgoing government officials and any other public official involving business people. It's called an oral committee that will build fundamental data. Then it will come before the prosecutor authorities who will take on. He has also appointed a chief of staff, appointed a few presidential advisors, appointed an interim security task force So we'll see from tomorrow, the president will begin to release his team. But he has promised the nation that within 14 days, he will complete setting up his cabinet.
And this is coming also, your party has made history in Ghana by having the first female vice president. How is she doing?
The female vice president is a scholar, a woman of impeccable academic pedigree, outstanding character and integrity, proven. She's going to be in charge of our health, education, and issues involving gender. She's also going to spearhead the construction of Women's Development Bank so that Ghanaian small-scale business women can walk in there and secure loans to do their small-scale business without having to be constrained by demand of collateral and all of that. And so she's very excited. She's in a good spirit.
Mustapha Bandi is the Deputy General Secretary of Ghana's main opposition, National Democratic Congress. He was speaking with me from the capital, Accra. The trial of Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye and his co-accused, Obe Lutale, resumed on Tuesday in a military court. Besigye's wife said the two were kidnapped in Kenya and brought back to Uganda. They are charged with unlawful possession of ammunition and a firearm. But in a dramatic move, one of the defense lawyers, Aaron Kizza, was arrested inside the courtroom and sentenced to 9 months in prison. The rest of the defense team refused to continue. Former Kenyan Justice Minister Martha Karua is the leader of the 32-member Besigye defense team. She tells me that the team could not continue without one of its members.
We did not boycott the court. We merely said we cannot proceed without our team member, Aaron Kizza, who had been brutally assaulted by the military officers in the presence of the court and detained, and we therefore were missing one member of the team.
Now, lawyer Aaron Kizza was sentenced to 9 months inside the courtroom. Did the authorities say exactly what he did?
Aaron Kizza was detained because he resisted being arrested by the military officers. The audacity of the military to arrest a lawyer in court who merely has appeared to represent a client is not only a violation of the law, but it's also a human rights abuse, which the military general court martial tolerated. We raised it with the chairman of the tribunal court, but nothing doing. Aaron Kizza was sentenced without any trial, without being given any chance. And the ruling distorted fact. They claimed lawyer Aaron Kizza assaulted the court orderlies, which is not true. There are videos clearly showing an altercation between Aaron and the orderlies when he's telling them he needs to enter. Then suddenly he's attacked with kicks, with blows, and injured.
When is the next court date?
The next court date is on Monday the 13th of January 2025. We have to retreat as lawyers and decide the next course of action in view of this brutal assault and interference of the lawyers' work. When one of us is interfered with, the entire team is interfered with.
Dr. Besigye, how would you describe his spirit in the courtroom?
Besigye and his co-accused, Mr. Obed Lutale, are, I'll not say high spirits, but they are strong. And as we'll see in that video, they joined in a protest song. They're strong and they'll continue resisting oppression and this unjustified trial in a military court when they are civilians and in a court that is applying brutal force instead of the law.
Former Kenyan Justice Minister Martha Karua is the leader of the 32-member defense team representing Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye. She was speaking with me from Kampala, Uganda. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 8th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ivory Coast and Senegal have announced that France will withdraw its troops from bases in their territories, effectively ending a decades-long military presence. The withdrawal is part of a broader trend among West African nations, which have ejected French troops in the last 3 years. Reporter Henry Wilkins spoke to experts on what it means for regional security.
A major shift in West Africa's security landscape. Ivory Coast and Senegal, regional economic powerhouses, have ordered France to remove troops from their territories. The withdrawals will mark the effective end of a decades-long military presence by France in Senegal and Ivory Coast. But why is this happening? Geoffrey Julian Kweyo, an Ivorian political scientist, explains it's part of a broader strategy by African nations wanting to forge new partnerships.
Les pays côtiers comme le Sénégal et la Côte d'Ivoire s'inscrivent dans la nouvelle dynamique.
He says he thinks that African politicians want to diversify their relations, especially with the countries of the global south, such as China, Turkey, Brazil, the Arab monarchies of the Gulf, but also with Russia. Ivory Coast and Senegal are following in the footsteps of Sahel countries that are fighting a war against jihadis linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. After almost 10 years of French military involvement failed to stop escalating terrorist violence in the Sahel. The former colonial power began removing its troops from the region in 2022.
Je pense que les hommes politiques africains veulent diversifier leurs relations.
Kouawo adds, coastal countries like Senegal and Ivory Coast are part of the new dynamic initiated by the Sahel states, such as Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger and Chad. These countries are looking for more sovereignty and, above all, politicians don't want to go against public opinion, which favours the departure of French troops. Public opinion in West Africa has become critical of French and Western military presence in the region. Many see it as a continuation of colonial ties. It's even become the source of debunked conspiracy theories that France is supporting terrorist groups. Rinaldo De Pagna, West Africa Project Director for the International Crisis Group, doubts the French military departure will improve security in Senegal and Ivory Coast, which border the Sahel countries and have seen terrorist attacks spilling over from them.
L'expansion du djihadisme dans le nord des pays côtiers est lente.
He says the expansion of jihadism in the north of the coastal countries has been slow, but fairly constant since 2020. He adds that it's not certain the departure of French troops, and more broadly of foreign troops, will make a big difference, except perhaps in terms of information sharing. Asked if Senegal and Ivory Coast could seek military partnerships with Russia, as some Sahel countries have, De Pagna responded.
Mais on se souvient que la présence des troupes françaises au Sahel entre 2013 et 2022.
That the presence of French troops in the Sahel between 2013 and 2022 did not restore security. The Russian troops currently engaged in the Sahel haven't done any better, he says. This is largely because the solution to Sahelian armed jihadism is not only military, but also political, he stresses. Other Western nations are offering military assistance to coastal West African countries. The US will hold its annual West African military exercise, Flintlock, in Ivory Coast this year. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Namibian activist Jimmy Aresep appeared in court this week after being arrested for allegedly violating public order laws during a protest at a local traditional authority offices. Aresep and others at the rally accused officials of accepting bribes from a Chinese mining company in return for access to lithium deposits. Vitalio Angular reports from Windhoek.
Images of an elderly woman being carried off by members of Namibia's paramilitary special field force on Saturday set the Namibian social media space abuzz, with some comments likening it to the apartheid era when the country was controlled by South Africa. In another circulating video, members of the widely feared police unit are seen confronting elderly men and women who had gathered at offices of traditional chiefs and counselors, whom they accuse of allowing the Chinese company Xingfeng permission to mine for lithium without following the proper channels and procedures. The tensions at Uis, a mining settlement in the mineral-rich Erongo region, culminated in the arrest of activist Jimmy Araseb for interfering with a special field force who were enforcing a court order for demonstrators to vacate the offices where they had camped for a week, demanding to see the chief. At the center of the storm is Xingfeng, a company that Namibia's Commissioner of Mines has charged with illegal mining. Community members are asking why police arrested Araseb, but not anyone from Xingfeng. Speaking to VOA, police spokesperson Kauna Shikwambi says the two cases cannot be compared.
Those were extracting officers right there at the scene. Now, the other one require investigation and there must be evidence. That's why investigation takes so long to have evidence that indeed now in a arrest and can be affected or not. You can never compare that and that. It doesn't make sense.
Xingfeng is accused by the activists of paying bribes to the chiefs in order to gain consent for the mining. However, a Xingfeng spokesperson, Kuve Kangwehi, said those claims are false. He says the company makes a contribution of about $550 per month to the traditional authority as part of its corporate social responsibility, and this is being misconstrued by the community as a bribe.
Appeals and mining claims and all the rights are granted by the ministry. So for what reason will Xingfeng bribe an entity that does not grant the license? And it's not in the business of Xingfeng to bribe anybody.
Local chief Zacharias Sebeb, who is being accused of turning a blind eye to the interests of the community in favor of the Chinese company, told VOA the people camping at his office, including Jimmy Araseb, are his in-laws. He says family members feel they are not benefiting from his position as a chief and are using the Xingfeng issue to settle family disputes.
I cannot deny someone access to prospecting or whatever in my area. I am just the custodian of the area. The land belongs to the state. And there is a section that deals with that consent letter. And that can be done with or without my consent letter.
Meanwhile, police say they are investigating the charge against Xingfeng. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
As China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi continues his week-long trip to Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Namibia and Nigeria, an African analyst says African nations are looking to recalibrate their strategic partnership with China to advance African interests in the new year. Paul Netulia is a senior research associate with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He tells viewers Carol Van Dam that China is also trying to create dependencies that make Africa more inclined to support China's global ambitions.
Each of those countries represents aspects of Chinese engagement around the continent. So, for instance, we're looking at Chad. Chad, it's a small country. China tends to prioritize, you know, large countries like South Africa, Nigeria, but also tends to visit smaller countries, you know, countries like Burundi, countries like Cabo Verde, and so on. So it reflects that mix. Chad brings a number of issues on the table as far as Chinese policy is concerned. It sits in a part of Africa that China has been expanding its engagement, right, going into the Sahel. Secondly, Chad is one of those countries that has seen this growing number of West African countries that have demanded an end to French military presence, French basing in their countries. Nigeria speaks for itself. It's a continental power. It's a major destination of Chinese investment. A major point also in terms of Chinese tourism. And Nigeria has recently signed a procurement agreement to secure the Y. The Y20 is a strategic logistics platform.
And why Namibia and the Democratic Republic of Congo? What does China want there?
Namibia is an important maritime partner on the Atlantic. China has major investments in Nigeria's port infrastructure. But China also, you know, China is engaged in uranium mining in Namibia. Namibia is ruled by a liberation movement that has historical ties with the Communist Party of China, going all the way back to its independence struggle. But it's also important. I mean, there's a satellite tracking station, a Chinese satellite tracking station in Swakopmund, and there are major Chinese investments in that country.
If you could briefly summarize, what is the FOCAC Beijing Action Plan, and how is China using it to expand its influence across the continent?
One, it's very institutionalized. It's very routinized. It's probably the most regularized, institutionalized mechanism that African countries have with a foreign power, right?
And I should say that FOCAC is Forum on China-Africa Cooperation.
China-Africa, yes. So it meets once. It meets once every 3 years, but it's not just a meeting. It's not just an ad hoc meeting of heads of state. It has a secretariat. It has programs, right, in different areas, right, industrialization, human resource development, professionalization training, and things of that nature. So for African countries, FOCAC becomes very attractive because they're able to use it as a mechanism to secure finance and to secure technical support in areas where Western countries kind of reduced their engagement, such as infrastructure and other areas.
Paul Natalia is a senior research associate with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. President-elect Donald Trump did not rule out using military or economic coercion to gain control of the Panama Canal and Greenland during a wide-ranging news conference in Florida on Tuesday. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara reports that Trump's remarks came hours after his son made a surprise trip to Greenland.
Greenland, the ice-covered semi-autonomous Danish territory, and the canal belonging to Panama that connects the Caribbean Sea with the Pacific Ocean. The United States must control both, said President-elect Donald Trump. At a press conference in Mar-a-Lago on Tuesday, Trump was asked if he can assure he would not use economic and military coercion to do so.
No, I can't assure you on either of those two, but I can say this. We need them for economic security.
Last week, Panama celebrated the 25th anniversary of the transfer of the canal from the United States. President of Panama, Jose Raul Molino.
En nuestras manos se va a quedar para siempre.
The canal is going to stay in our hands forever. Today we see the Panamanian flag flying freely.
Vemos la bandera panameña ondear libremente.
And since 1941, the U.S. has maintained a military base in Greenland, which is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, but has wide-ranging autonomy.
People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world. You look at, you don't even need binoculars. You look outside, you have China ships all over the place. You have Russian ships all over the place. We're not letting that happen.
Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen has repeatedly said Greenland is not for sale. She said it again Tuesday as the president-elect's son, Donald Trump Jr., arrived for a previously unannounced visit to the territory.
I will make it very clear that seen with the eyes of the Danish government, Greenland is for the Greenland people.
During Tuesday's press conference, Trump was also asked whether he would use military force to annex Canada, which he suggested should be part of the U.S.
No, economic force, because Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line and you take a look at what that looks like, and it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada.
Outgoing Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on social media, quote, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that Canada would become part of the United States. It's unclear whether the president-elect is aiming to deliver on these threats or use them as a negotiation tactic under his America First foreign policy as he prepares to come into office on January 20th, said Georgetown University Professor Thessalia Merivaki via Skype.
We live in a society where a lot of these decisions are made and not made on a unilateral basis, and even if...
And that was reporter Patsy Wadekuswara reporting. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Button, Washington, saying have a lovely day.